break the ice, why don't we take 1 minute and literally quickly go around the room, give your name and basically, you know, 1 second about your background. And then what we're going to do is we're going to have the comp committees present. What we're going to do is have comp committee, that group B here, is actually going to start and be asked to talk about the market comparisons. Group A comp committee, and maybe what we should do is as you make your presentation, maybe that's the best time to introduce yourself, instead of going around
right.
the room.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Then we're going to go to group A and ask you to talk about base salary, bonus, sort of the cash side. Then we're going to go to group C and ask you to talk about total comp.
Particularly the
okay?
equity.
And as we talk, so after group, for example, each group talks, we'd like to get a discussion going because different groups could have different views on this. So with that, Neil, do you want to start by, your team needs to introduce themselves and then talk to the rest of the group about what your compensation committee thought about market reference for the CEO comp.
Did we all read the same case or different cases?
You all had the same case.
Okay.
And these are real companies, so.
Joe McCadden with IEP Technology. We're just over a month old. We spent out of United Technologies. I was with them for about 6.5 years and previously both were in this company.
Bill Johnson. I am a finance faculty member at Suffolk University and have business experience at Tyco and Maycom.
Neil Gordon, corporate finance advisor, strategy consultant. He's on a couple of private boards right now. Several bunch of reports.
Ann Bailey Berman, I chat with Mark Bailey. We're a market research, market information firm. I'm on a couple of boards.
And your what's your position at present?
Okay. Dan Goff here, most recently VP of HR at Monster Worldwide.
So let's hear from now we're going to hear from the group, and then we'll do each group introduces, so we kind of mix it up. So.
Okay.
Let me
start with.
We need you to talk specifically about the market reference of the peer groups.
Right. So we started with a presumption here that we only know about this company what we read in two pages.
Right.
Right. And so, in comparing this particular entity with those in the index. In some cases, you could argue for more complicated, lots of stuff in R&D, revenues are not reflective of the complexity of the organization relative to the peer groups, all those things. And we took the position that we don't know any of those things. So we accept that the index is representative of the company, whether it be at this point in time or some future time.
So you've concluded of the three choices.
So we concluded that of the three choices, the traditional market reference was appropriate in this case.
Okay. Did anyone come to a different decision? Either of the other groups come to a different decision?
Okay.
Same? You guys come to the same?
Yeah, we were going to shift to the national reference.
Okay, and your rationale was?
The rationale was that, you know, they seem like they're moving beyond just what would be New England based, and you know, we kind of read it as they represent more of a national company. They're doing a lot of their production outside of the U.S. and outside of the region. They're shifting into consumer products, you know, more and more, and that's going to take them, you know, kind of in a broader direction than just kind of using New England as a comp. And so we thought it made sense to look outside of the region.
Tom,
yeah.
What's your view?
The reference page, right? You can't take.
Well, actually, you can, and what the you know, as the you know, expert is that the one thing that I saw missing here is that the data was very general. I mean, lots of companies, lots of industries, they need a peer group that reflects who they are, and so most peer groups are about 12, 15 companies, right? And you'll pick, you know, and you could put a combination of people in technology and consumer products, and they typically look at 50% less. And two times your size, relative on a revenue size. And we also sometimes like to say, are there particular companies that are like you culturally, that you know, if you were a benchmark in terms of your style of company and your model and who you are culturally, can those people also be on the list? So you think about for reference, it's good to sort of have something that reflects more than just your size, your industry. That's kind of boring, but really reflects something that's dynamic about what you are in a business. And so the one thing is that they need to do here is dig into that a little bit more, because then you have something to really compare yourself. And these others are good references, but they're kind of, you know, you're shooting a bit against a big wall.
I'd agree with that, unless you have the CEO there because he's viewed as a change agent to try and make it a company unlike it currently is.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
In which case, you want to be looking at peer companies that are what you want to become.
That's
not
right.
Not necessarily what you are.
What you are, or your industry. I've got a client who says, they're in the travel vacation industry, and they say they do not want to use any data that relates to travel because they're that industry. Because they are an internet services company, and that's really who they are. So to your point, not in their industry, but they're beginning to be branched out to be something different.
Well, to take a slightly different perspective, Tom, you might say that you would want to compare them with other kind of medium-sized industrial companies who are achieving much, if not most, of their growth through acquisitions.
Good
and
point.
And it doesn't make any difference whether they're making widgets or Tom Fullery.
Good point. Good point.
Okay.
Good point. That's a really good point.
Because what's critical to the long-run success of the firm?
Right. Exactly.
So I think our takeaways are, I guess, you know, as we put this together, in the way I was looking at it was, one, you have to, the comp committee has to spend a lot of time on this, right? We gave you 5 minutes or something, so obviously that isn't enough. But it's something that every comp committee I have been on spends an inordinate amount of time, goes back and forth, talks about parameters, talks about where you are, where you're trying to be, and looks at the heart of what the company is. So it is not an easy process. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of detail. The one thing, not to disagree with people, I would say is, based on what they are trying to do, I probably would not have concluded to stay with where you are. And that's the one thing. And I would have, you know, that would have been a big red flag to me, saying, If it's where you're staying where you are, then why is he changing strategies?
Right.
So it's just a disconnect in the case that's sort of a red flag. So when you see that again, just, you know, think about that is, I guess, the point I would make.
Let's go to the next group.
Introduce
yourselves.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, that last point, yeah. Though, I mean, again, we were given A and B, and
C.
They're doing two changes, right?
Correct.
One's consumer and one's national tech, but they're considering them. So you really don't know which direction they're going to go in. So why wouldn't you use the traditional market reference for this year? Remember, this is going to happen every year, right? We're not locking this guy in for 10 years.
Right.
So I would stick with where we are today and keep your suggestion in mind for next year, when we see which direction we're actually going.
And this is why it's a very exciting discussion at the comp committee. The CEO's already hiring people to move them into consumer products.
But you got to see if that actually happens.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an exciting conversation. We would have a lot of fun on this topic.
The other question I have, and this kind of came up in our group as well, is if you don't compensate based on where you are and you compensate on where your goal is, then everyone will pick the best.
Mm-hmm.
And your compensation regime is going to be bloated in some sense because not everybody has 20%
right.
growth.
That's
right.
Nobody
right.
plans.
That's right.
Our
that's
revenues
fair.
Are going to decline 5%
right.
next year.
Right.
Right.
No one
right.
has that plan,
right.
but somebody is going to.
Well, it's a great point. That's a good segue into the other group because then
okay.
you say, what's the basis on which you're going to set the compensation now?
So,
but you're right about
why
that.
Don't we hear who the members are on Group B and then hear what you decided to do with base and bonus?
I'm in DuPont, though. I work independently with different companies with a lot of startups and have worked with a lot of Israeli companies as part of my career.
Brent Ratz, president and founder of a medical device company, Cardiac Valve Technologies. We're developing a non-surgical system for mitral valve replacement.
Chris Root, recently retired from National Grid after 30 years, the senior VP of operations and engineering.
Jerry.
Jamie Olberg, seeking a career in finance. I started out at AT&T and then spent the last 12 years at Ernst & Young.
I'm Jay Nolens, and I've been a general counsel of three public companies, also corporate secretary. For the last 3 years, I've been mentoring younger lawyers and coaching them on their careers.
So where did you come to in terms of base and bonus compensation?
Well, we're just getting into that, so I don't think we've resolved anything.
Okay.
But certainly the considerations are whether the base salary is too low, and from the information we have, even though a customized market grouping makes more sense, we concluded that it is. So just we were considering using the 98 technology companies reference, and so we thought we would say 450 as a base with a 50% bonus possibility for cash, and much more rigorous targets. It sounds from the case study that they're loose now and can be manipulated. One thing we don't know, and the comp committee spent a lot of time talking about and have to put down on paper when the proxy comes out, is just what the board's or the comp committee's philosophy is about what do you want this guy to be rewarded for, and how concerned are you that he will leave? Do you just accept his growth numbers, or do you really have stretch targets, that sort of thing?
Good question. Yeah.
So he was, I mean, the CEO was there when it was a $5 million company, right? So even if you were giving him, you know, 20% raise every year, he's still way, way below, right?
Right.
So at some point in time,
which
you have to
bring him
to
reason why, yeah.
And the question is, the comp committee asked is, if he were to leave tomorrow, okay,
yeah,
could you ever attract anybody at that salary?
Right.
I would argue there's no way you'd ever hire anybody that. You'd go up, hire somebody who you've never seen before, okay, interviewed him a couple of times, and have great consultants, great as, and you hire them, probably at, you know, 1.5 times what you're paying a guy that you know who's done a great job, or presumably that you like a lot. And so you really, you could end up kicking yourself, you know, with his track record if he says, you know, I'll go double my salary, see you later,
right,
I'll accept with the company B, with the comp, with, not the comp committee, but the whole board.
Right. And you might want to look, as indicated, there might be a compression with the people he's bringing in, that all of a sudden these guys coming in at, 10 or 15% below him, which is not enough. And the issue is not these guys being too high, he's too low relative. So I think you look at, and the other thing I think you all said, it was interesting, says, is that we may want to do this sort of contingent on and sort of build it in over a couple of years, ramp both of them up, but at a much higher rate than what the traditional market's moving. So moving his salary up 50 or 80 grand a year kind of thing, like 10 or 15%, over a 2 or 3 year period, and at the same time increasing his incentive, but also raising the bar in terms of what you're expecting in terms of results.
So could we hear if either of the other groups had a different general conclusion on, not that the number has to be identical, but directionally in terms of base and bonus?
We would directionally go in the same place.
Yeah,
but we were lower overall in figures because I come from a private equity firm.
So I have a question then to the I have a question to the room, because one of the, as we were batting it back and forth, is I would have expected more leverage on the bonus. That's just my thought. That's I have a lot of tech background, so I think in terms of equity and bonus, but that's just my bias. We all come with our bias.
This particular group talked about that.
Yeah.
We saw the objective as longer term than that.
Okay.
Than longer term than annual result bonus.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
that's fair.
We skewed it to equity.
Okay, that's a good point.
And
yeah.
While we focused on getting the salary up, we also were kicking up the bonuses, but with the idea of stretching out the performance periods, perhaps using restricted stock that would become unrestricted over a period of years, with the idea that You certainly want to get to where the market is, but mm-hmm. you also don't want to create a perverse incentive for him to make this company worth as much as possible and bail out.
Right.
Right.
Because
right.
then you've shot yourself in the foot.
Right. 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 That's
or do
good.
Stuff that would
That's
make
good.
It look like that way on paper, but not in real reality.
We didn't talk about it, but the point you raised, I think, is also very good, that to the extent the CEO has had his salary raised in a lot and it's still too low, there's a pretty good chance that there's a compression in the salaries below him,
yeah.
so
mm-hmm.
that the people that he's bringing in, as well as the entire executive pool of the company,
right.
Probably have not gotten the percentage raises that he has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore, they're grossly under
yeah.
the market,
yeah.
Which
mm-hmm.
would again be something to consider as you went forward, how to remedy that over time.
Yeah, your risk is losing the number two.
Yeah, well.
Right.
Yeah, we talked about
Yeah, could
well,
you guys take
yeah.
us
yeah,
through
sure.
total
yeah.
comp?
Sure.
So throw in the equity now and tell us how you view.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we need you to introduce
yourselves,
please.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Start on this end.
Sure.
I'm Warren Chang.
Whoa.
You forgot your teammate here.
I'm Amita Soni, and I'm a member of the Edison Ventures Director Network and serve on the board of their investment, Plump Choice, and the chief marketing officer for another investment of theirs, BFA. And I am now the
performance
position.
Good.
I am Warren Chang. I recently retired from the State Department. Prior to that, I was a pharmaceutical executive doing mergers and acquisitions and cross-border business strategy.
John McCann. I was chairman of the board of large international scale companies, which we bought out of the London Exchange, rolled up with an equity firm there in Boston. Been on a half a dozen public and private boards and just bought Focus now.
Ray Matthew, retired after 25 years as CFO of Providence Equity Partners. Looking for board positions right now. Most recently joined the Slater Technology Fund.
Mike DeMarco, retired investment manager. Extensive experience in both portfolio management and risk management. And I'm looking for an opportunity to join a mutual fund board.
Okay. So, what was your conclusions in terms of the whole package, which meant base bonus and equity?
Well, we thought they were low, obviously, so we were bumping them up to 400K as far as the salary was concerned, 200 for a bonus.
So 50% bonus.
Right.
Okay.
And we bumped them up to 600 equity award to keep the equities and cash comp, you know,
50-50.
Per pursuit, I guess you could say.
And we also discussed, but didn't put a number on it, of having restricted stock over a 10-year period with a
mm-hmm.
very big balloon payment,
mm-hmm.
providing that he hit some of these targets. And our great concern was that this would never pass the IISS, everybody'd be after the compensation committee,
right.
because the strategy or the rules are very loose. They have to be tightened up. We don't know what those are. We were very concerned about the senior management team being compensated so that they're in the boat with this guy and they want him to succeed and they're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we were concerned about the board being compensated the right way, so they weren't incentivized to sell the place out in 2 years.
Always come back around.
They got through everything,
they
right?
do.
You know, so we were cynical, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, probably right.
But we also thought that we should get sheets like this for the other top-level executive positions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And take a look at how they compare.
Yeah,
and see what
good.
Has to be done there, because obviously something needs to be done also.
Yeah.
One of the conversations that we were having as we put this together was the whole get into the conversation of performance equity, restricted shares of performance equity. Did either of the other two groups discuss that? And if so, how did you look at it?
One of the things that came up with this is that this guy already owns 5% of the company. And
right.
at what point in time is it the CEO have too much equity in the company or not? And
right.
he's pretty,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's
right.
got a big
right.
stake here, right? So
right.
obviously he's
right.
grown.
Right.
He's become pretty wealthy just on the equity, you know,
right.
on that.
But he's
so
vested.
But we debated about, you know, is 5% a lot? How much how comfortable are you if he's at 8, 9?
Right.
What's the right number? And,
mm-hmm.
and is it just because he's been here a long time? Is that okay? I don't know. So we didn't have an answer, but it was something we questioned.
It's a great
but
question.
I think your point is the relevant one there, which is he's vested, so he could walk away and get that 5% tomorrow.
Right.
You know, you need to give him something to stick around for, and I think the 10-year
right. That's right. And he has a 4-year vesting period, but he's vested in everything but 1 year. So
right.
Right.
He's
right.
He's getting all the money.
Yeah, there's no hooks.
Say it's his salary.
And you should each year, I mean, this is, you know, where I've worked, each year when you were giving new awards, they always stretched out for 5 years. It took you 5 years, you know. Yeah, the other thing is, but even though he's at 5% now, if they continue to grow through acquisitions,
mm-hmm.
that'll increase. He gets diluted just like everyone else.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Which is maybe a way to address your
yeah.
other question in terms of how that makes. But let me ask you a question, because we talk about restricted stock. Why not options? I mean, the world's, you know, we used to be made up of options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, if you think about it, because, you know, if you play a Black-Scholes game, is that the ratio is usually one that people talk about 1-4. So one share of stock is worth 4 stock options. And it usually is a function of Black-Scholes is around 40% when you play the numbers, mm-hmm. my simple math, right? I like to keep things kind of simple. So the question is that people have gone to restricted stock really since the recession,
right.
coming out of
right.
recession, because people got hosed,
right.
it's a technical
yeah.
term,
right.
you know, with options, and
mm-hmm.
they got burned and they're nervous about it. And what we're finding in his company, would you want to have restricted stock, or would you rather have options?
Well,
I mean, let me
add an element to that, because there's another piece of information.
I feel excited here.
I know you're excited, but you know I need to kind of rein you a little bit back, and there's another piece of information you need to know. The other thing that's changed is the accounting rules. So people
right.
who are using options end up reporting variable results mm-hmm. on their
right.
financial
right.
statements, and so folks who have a lot of options
right.
are always, when they report their numbers, they have to report sort of GAAP and then non-GAAP, which analysts
right.
hate, the SEC hates,
mm-hmm.
and it creates all sorts of additional issues that
absolutely
a lot
right.
of CEOs and a lot of boards in particular don't want to have
yeah.
to go through. So
no,
I just put that into the box.
There's clearly
here.
A trend towards a mixture of portfolio. The question
yeah.
is, what's the
yeah.
right balance
yeah.
and the numbers, things like that.
I think some of the rules force
are forcing it towards
restricted
stock,
they're
yeah,
it.
Or RSUs or whatever. Yeah.
So
another
I'm sorry, Jane.
Consideration is that shareholders can get upset if management has too much
right.
of the equity. So if you get the same psychological benefit by giving one share instead of four options
right.
versus one share restricted stock, it looks better to shareholders.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The whole overhang
now,
issue.
Now, one of the arguments on the other side is that restricted stock is worth something even if you
right.
plummet.
Right.
Whereas an option,
right.
if you're below the exercise price. So,
and when you buy stock, you put your money in, you
exactly.
know, it's more aligned with options than it is aligned with
yeah.
restricted stock. So there's a lot of dynamics around ownership and the philosophy with and the alignment with the shareholders.
And I'm involved in a startup, and we use restricted stock because one reason is the person gets the restricted stock, and they understand it's vesting, but really when they get it, I got it.
Yeah, right.
Because they figure, I'm going to stay here for the 5 years,
right.
or I'm going to be here when it gets triggered through the sale of a takeout or something
yeah.
like that. So it's really something that I've got. This is my stock.
Yeah. One other thing, to your point about a balloon payment kind of deals, there's an interesting psychology that is at work here. The farther you go out and the more contingencies that are associated with that, the larger that number needs to be in order to influence you today.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly right.
So the question is, you could give somebody $1 billion with all kinds of things and it will feel like $1,000.
Right.
Right.
Have something, give somebody worth maybe $1 million and it would be worth, it feel like $500,000, you know, it feel.
Yeah.
So part of the dynamic in the psychology when you put these things together is to understand the psychology that's going to be working in people's brains as they think about the relationship of equity and options and contingencies and
yeah.
performance. And
right.
people sometimes
that's
don't think
point.
Through the implications of all that
that's
when
a real
they're putting
good
a
plan
together.
Because years ago, we had an ESOP in a company. And the chairman said, I want to give every employee money at Christmas
mm-hmm.
time.
Right.
I don't want them to know it's coming.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the longer term and the higher guys to get more. So even a low guy's been
yeah.
here 20, I want
yep.
to get money.
Yeah.
So the board, we all said, well, why, Chet? What's you know, if you put it in their retirement, they're gonna get, he said, John, a 30-year-old guy doesn't think he's ever gonna see 65. He could care less.
Right.
But Christmas is coming.
And credit cards in January are coming.
We had the best discussion about that.
Right.
And he was right, because we gave them money. And 450 people from the manufacturing plant, which connected to the headquarters, lined up to shake our hands. Mm-hmm. Greatest day I ever had in business. It was unbelievable. And he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
That's a small, you know, a private company, a small thing, but...
It's
the only strategy, because they didn't actually know they were going to get it. So
it didn't know they
like
were
going to
get it.
And we
made sure that we didn't tell them that it was given to the supervisors on the floors of the plant, because they always gave the bad news.
Right.
But we didn't want to be the guys just to give the good news.
That's good. That's a good point.
And the supervisors thought we were laying people off. We called them all into the cafeteria, and they thought,
nothing good happened.
That's
nothing
good happened. Right.
Nothing good ever happened.
And it's Christmas time.
Right.
And
yeah.
So,
building, and, you know.
So the thought I would leave with you, though, is that there's certainly been an increased focus in public companies around restricted stock and performance targets.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of time being spent in comp committees on that. And it's usually not 10 years. It's usually, I think,
three to five.
Most.
I mean, can you see?
Something you can see, but something that has very measurable performance targets and usually is going down to the next level, to the C-suite.
Right.
So let's assume we've accepted the last proposal on the table, okay? And now we're 1 year later. And then we do have another handout to go through.
Let's just tell them what it's on here.
I was just going to do it.
Great.
You've seen it. A year's gone by. The CEO who we loved and we gave this increase to, 2 months after, 3 months after we did it, he announced his retirement because he had health issues. So it was interesting. Mindy was the one person who asked about age. But I said 60. So it was like, could have lived another 40 years or... maybe not. So he has not been able to sit in the seat. They've got an interim CEO now, somebody from the inside, and they have been looking for 10 months for a new guy. They know he's got to be a billion experience with $1 billion revenue, or at least the CEO profile by the board. $1 billion of revenue, consumer products, because remember they moved in that. In the meantime, they moved in the direction they said they were going to. Experience as a CEO of somebody that's grown very quickly, because they're having good growth. A lot of global international experience, and obviously all the good organizational development leadership issues. So they found a guy, and if you look at page 2, and as a couple people here have said, it's exactly, I was laughing. It was almost like you had written the case, right? It's like, and the numbers actually match up to your comment too, which was really funny.
But this is for $1 billion CEO, and the company was a $250 million.
I understand.
Right.
This is what the board has decided. The board has decided to get to what they want. They want somebody who's already been there.
Right.
So I've seen this movie before many times.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's wrong. I've just seen the
just
movie.
It is.
It is.
It just is.
But we can argue, because actually I lived exactly this case. We changed up numbers and everything, but Tom and I've had a lot of fun talking about it.
I know a lot of folks. I've seen this movie 6 times.
Question. One comment is that the guy started at $5 million and he made it that far. That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's quite a flexible stretch. He's got a lot of elasticity. But my question is, at the level that they were at, $250 million,
right.
Say public company, do they attract the attention from ISS and these guys who are going through the proxy statements like crazy, telling your shareholders, we don't think you should vote this board in because this compensation is out of line or in line. Will they look at a company this small?
Well, ISS theoretically looks at every public company. I'm giving you the theory.
Right.
And they actually they've been fine-tuning their grid. And the way they fine-tune their grid is that if you fall outside their grid, they look at it hard. And so the answer is, depending on how badly you're off the grid, they'll either come down hard or not.
Even
still, shareholders don't always go with ISS.
Oh, no, no, some of them have been pushing back in a good way.
And so some people take, because there's some, but it's everybody's developing.
Point, ISS stands for Institutional Shareholder Services. It's a body that is retained by institutional investors to help them identify public companies that are prone to class action shareholder lawsuits, among other things.
So just to add to that, you've got two main guys, ISS and Glass Lewis, and a lot of the big pension funds that own a lot of stock in many, many public companies will refer their voting to how ISS is recommending, because it allows for a sort of separation of state, city and state or whatever, sort of an arm's length. And so ISS and Glass Lewis have taken on bigger than life impact in terms of proxy voting. And in fact, one of the last document we're going to hand out is sort of what's happening in compensation in 2013. And a lot of the public companies have been up in arms because ISS and Glass Lewis are essentially directing a lot of shareholders. Now, the shareholders don't have to vote with them, but it's easy for a lot of these guys. It's easy for a lot of the pension
CYA
funds,
for them.
Right, to follow the recommendations of ISS or Glass Lewis, but they're unregulated.
Right.
So there's been enough cries from public companies that the SEC has actually started to look into the whole point of should these guys be regulated.
I think probably 70% of the people in this room know this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
30% of the room may not.
Okay.
But if you're investigating a public company and you want to see the ISS rating, you can do it for free. Just Google Yahoo space finance space profile space, and then put in the name of the company that you're interested in. And then on the right side of the screen, you'll see something called ISS rankings. And there will be rankings on the general board. There's probably some two other things that are missing. But it goes from 1 to 5. And I think the smaller the number, the better. The higher the number, the more it's going to stick out.
Challenge.
So if any of you want to just look at some of the companies you're interested in, it's you Google Yahoo space, finance space, profile space, name of company, look on the right side of the screen, look for ISS. Again, it's from 1 to 5. The higher the number, the worse the ranking.
Do you want to add anything to that?
Only the fact that actually the say on pay issue, which is another thing we talked about, the voting on proving the non-binding voting on executive compensation, it's gotten a lot of air, but like 95-98% of the companies pass. So there's a question that says what's happening with that, and there's one thing that has done, and what ISS has done, is it's put a lot of scrutiny on executive compensation and a lot of public data. What's also fascinating is that it's had a major effect on private companies. In terms of if you ever want to become public or you want to dress up yourself to look like a more sustainable, professionally run, you follow the same rules as what you have to see in the public sector. So there's an interesting set of dynamic forces which has really been reshaping the whole guidelines by which people are looking at this. About the mix of compensation, about tax gross ups, about country club memberships. I mean, the whole nine yards is really beginning to look at it. And why we threw this particular case study in here, this kind of this wrench, if you will, is that here's somebody who wants a lot of money and a lot of stuff. And so the question is, what's this guy negotiable? What is really right? But this is an issue that compensation committee is going to have to deal with around the negotiation about what's appropriate relative to our external image vis-a-vis ISS or whoever else, and what's going to be to get this guy to come on or gal to come on and work with us. So those are real issues that happen as exec comp committees they're getting more involved in the questions of succession and in the succession and the development of executives and the retention of executives than ever before, which is why, going back to your earlier question, why the rate of pay going to board members who are on compensation committees is increasing almost more rapidly than that in audit committees.
Right.
So one thing just to kind of fill you in, and then we do have some information that goes out to comp committees, which we thought would be useful from the NACD. Since I sit on the board of the NACD, I thought that might be a good thing. But just to give you the bottom line on here, when we were going through this, we concluded the comp committee, at least our little, if we were the comp committee, said differently, we would have gotten him pretty close to the salary. Maybe it's 800, not 840. We would have gotten the bonus of 75-80% is actually in the target actually range. And then equity, we talked about a large restricted stock grant spread over 5 years with very strict performance. Because as we sat and thought about it, if it's tied to very tight performance targets, then the market cap of this company will go where it needs to go. Because right now, you know, it's at like 2x, and the market of its peers are already at 3. And the difference is, if you just getting it to the market cap multiple in and of itself will, you know, shareholders will be a whole lot happier. Those things were doable. The challenge actually is not in the salary, equity, or bonus. The challenge is that these days, you don't do tax gross-ups, you don't do health coverage, long-term health coverage, you don't do the tax filings. I guess you could do the tax filings, because it's de minimis, but you don't do country club memberships. So it's the perks that actually are the biggest problem in this particular situation.
And then the small, I mean, you can fix that.
Exactly.
You would think.
Exactly.
You should be able to.
Pay your money, go buy your own coke.
What did you think of the 3-year severance?
Yeah.
What we see happening, you know, the practice is if there's a double trigger, single trigger question. So company gets bought under a change of control,
right,
and you lose your job, all happens within 6 months. Everything gets unvested, gets vested, and
right.
And there's sometimes also a 3x total cash compensation,
right,
as an award. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of allowed under
and
the
2
I'm
familiar with those.
Yeah.
And those weren't considered at the time anyway. Onerous in terms of,
right,
being a poison pill,
right,
was
right,
fine,
right,
in terms,
yeah, exactly,
of the,
I think that's right.
Yeah.
So the question in all this, I think, is that, you know, there's lots of ways you could cut this thing, but if you look at it, we say,
no, that's okay.
What's going to drive that in negotiations for an acquisition, if that happens to be the course that this thing takes? You want the executives to continue to focus on the business and what needs to drive the business to make the best deal, and to be, I won't call it agnostic, but close to agnostic relative to that decision, so they don't say, I'm going to have a wonderful payday,
right,
or I'm going to,
right,
get screwed, and that's another technical term in our world. So you want to look kind of where that balance is. That's why some reason I love this work is that it is, if you think about the work we're doing, it is a thoughtful art form. Because you have to think about all these various variables and find the right solution, which is why there's no single solution here.
Right.
There's standards in the practice in the industry, but some of that is bullshit. That's another,
yeah,
technical term.
Yeah.
But some of it, it really is guidelines that says, if you're clear about what you're about, and you're clear about what you believe, and you can document it, and you can justify it, what's wrong with that in terms of how you structure? Because this is what you need to do for this particular business. And so. But that means as a shareholder and as a board member, it's really looking at what has to happen to really stand up, if you will, to the public scrutiny if it's the right answer. But you've got to really know that that's right.
And the only thing I would add to that, a de minimis thing, is in a lot of my comp committees, we talk about how do we keep from being on the front page of the Wall Street Journal for compensation?
Right.
Which means,
right,
one of the tests,
right,
you do is, if something goes really well, what is the result going to be in compensation? And if things go very poorly, you know, I mean, is the guy still going to walk off with $100 million?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so you need to think, just test it for extremes and say, do you still feel comfortable with whatever it is you're proposing? And it's,
right,
sort of a,
right,
I hate
absolutely
to say
right
it.
Right.
So,
if you could just comment on that. point further. The new compensation package that, that you came up with, which is the adjustment to what the CEO candidate was asking for, is still a multiple of what the incumbent is getting. So what about the rest of the executive suite? What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, our intent is to, as several groups mentioned, is to take a look at that.
Right.
Probably what happened if you bring in this new guy, then you've got air now. You can probably move some people up.
Right.
The question becomes now, this is an issue of talent management and a right staffy model and what's right, fair, and just, and all that sort of good stuff. So there's issues about making some, but once again, we wouldn't sort of make wholesale changes, but you do it over a rapidly period of time so people know that there's going to be progress in terms of their own income and growth. And a lot more contingent on some factors we all talked about in this other group is the issues of understanding what the metrics are that you're going to tie them to,
right,
the pay, so that you feel, as a comp committee, justified in paying this guy the kind of money, or the gal the kind of money, right, you're talking
if
about.
If I can just have the,
yep,
last word. If you look at the compensation committee, and there is a trend, particularly in high-tech companies, life sciences companies, for the new name to be called compensation and management development,
mm-hmm,
or compensation and executive development.
Yep.
When you look at the old school companies, like the board of State Street, for example, it's still called the compensation committee. You can go on the website,
yep,
and in a public company, you can go into investors, and then they'll show you the comp committees, and they'll show you the mandates of the compensation committees. It is in the nature of CEOs, it's probably their personalities, that they want to be indispensable and to convince the board this company will be destroyed without that CEO. It is not in the CEO's interest to institute a development system so that the CEO is dispensable. I mean, that's crazy. So what you see with the more modern companies is that they say, it's the board's responsibility to make sure that there is succession planning, that there is development. It's a board responsibility, it's not a CEO responsibility. CEO has to execute, but we're going to drive it, but it's driven by the compensation committee.
Mm-hmm.
And as you look at companies, just look at the mandates of the compensation committee. That's another reason why,
mm-hmm,
people who are on comp committees are getting more money, because,
mm-hmm,
their mission is
expanding.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. And just the mandate of the compensation committee will tell you a lot about the corporate culture.
Well, I just wonder, Larry, you're reminding me of the Jim Collins discussion of a level five manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, to what extent can the board influence that? Can they really?
You want to explain what a level five manager is and that work?
Well. I'm just trying to remember his name from Ford. Iacocca is considered by Jim Collins' research group from Stanford the prototype level four manager. A brilliant leader, able to turn problematic businesses around, et cetera, et cetera. But he never achieved level five, a level five performance, which is to create continuity of executive leadership for the firm, rather than, you know, be the guy in the white charger.
Right.
One of the points they make, incidentally, is that the handful of firms that their research project indicated had achieved level five were firms where nobody in this room could, within 15 minutes without the iPhone, name the CEO of that firm.
Right. Yeah.
Can I, because I'm afraid we're going to lose people.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I just want to make sure you look at pages 3 and 4 of the attached document, since we're here for comp. And the quick note is that new rules, one, comp committees are getting independence requirements, think a la audit committee. That's the highlight takeaway. There's a lot more to it. You've got, you know, all sorts of references here for you to look at. As far as say on pay goes, the interesting thing, and Tom's already alluded to it, is a lot of noise, not much impact. Having said that, a lot of plaintiffs, a lot of guys who are unhappy with the way the companies they're investing in are doing. The noise level's increasing. And I guess my message is stay tuned. The movie's not over yet. Sort of the battle's been fought, but the war hasn't happened. So I'm not sure where this is going. Right. Would you agree with me?
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, stay so tuned. Who knows?
Let me stop with that. Let me introduce our two guests. You want to introduce yourselves? Tracy?
Tracy Camden. I'm working for the same company, Innovative Photo. It's a photo booth company that we operate out of Salem, New Hampshire. And photo booths all over the country.
There's one in the final hall marketplace.
Yeah, there is.
Good.
This is Carl Neese.
Yeah, Carl Neese, I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Innovative Photo. And we're the photo booth guys, so wherever you go, Walt Disney World, SeaWorld, San Diego Zoo, just about everywhere, any shopping center, mall.
Terrific.
Please continue to stay and schmooze. I'm delighted that you're here.
Yeah,
hope to
welcome.
See you next month.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Sure.
How does this all change? Does it change much
good.
For private companies? That
would be good.
Well, you know, these are all, the disclosure.
Nice meeting you. They're out there.
So I'm going back and forth. So I'm doing everything as president and COO. He's there on paper, but admittedly, he's not. I'm the guy working the ARP speak right now. He's phoning it in.
Yeah.
Right? He's still. The board gave the okay that he can still do this consulting company on the side.
Which might work.
Or at least one day a week or something like that.
Right.
It's on two other boards.
You can get on
our board.